Okay, everyone, here we are. Key to Redemption, Episode 2, Part 3. Shabbos, the Dvar Malchus of 57-51. Shabbos, Parshas, Afrei Kedosh, and we are at the third part. This is really, really phenomenal learning. I highly recommend, if you're tuning into this class, to listen to the last two. And listen, actually, to the last four of last week, and to six classes. This is class number 7 in the series. Key to Redemption. Let's see if we can conclude it today. That's the goal. Okay, so yesterday we were learning how the whole exploration was that redemption is not a new chapter. Redemption is the very world that we're living in right now, but to unplug the godliness that's in it, and as a result of that, this gushing infinite light that will be revealed in the physical. And even all the further revelations that will happen throughout all of eternity, it will all be connected to the physical. In other words, physicality itself will be infinite and boundless. And it's connected to our service right now in working with the physical world based on the concept of what we learned in Pirkei Avos, that a person should look at three things, which means don't ignore that there's a world. Don't think that living a spiritual life is to escape material and physical. It's precisely in the physical. So we learned how that's connected to the sphere of Omer, particularly is the time of the counting of the Omer is when we are occupied in fixing the 7 negative emotions. We're fixing our human side. My daughter gave a class earlier about that as well, worth listening to. So fixing our human side, because our human side is ultimately meant to be, meaning the material, the body, the physical, because that's where we discover the essence of God. And so sphere of Omer, what I forgot to say yesterday, one important point, as the Rebbe says, within all the Sfira Sa'omer that we do, particularly that week, this week of Sfira, which is the week of Netzach. As he says, it's the Malchut of this year. We're just starting Netzach on Friday. Then it was on Shabbos, it was already the conclusion of the week of Netzach. So in the week of Netzach, which is victory, and it was on Shabbos, it was the Malchus of the Netzach, which means it was the victory of kingdom. Whose victory? The Rebbe says, it's the victory of Mashiach. That Mashiach has been victorious. What is the victory of Mashiach? Mashiach is able to uplift all of existence. That's its victory. In other words, we recognize there's a world, but we approach the world with confidence that we have the key to unlock its godly light, and we know we're going to be victorious in that, and we're going to do it, and we do it. And then, in the earlier class yesterday, I'm just filling in a few things that I missed yesterday. Another very important idea we were learning was how this is revealed in the parsha as well, which talks about the priest, the Kohen Gadol, highest day, even though he's going into such a holy place, yet the place was physical, very important. And the priests in general had to wear special, beautiful clothing, which means that aesthetically beautiful in the temple, which teaches us that being connected to God on the deepest levels is not the abandonment of the physical, it's via the physical, it's via the beauty of the physical world. One of the points I forgot to mention yesterday is the Rebbe says another fascinating idea. We know that the high priest has to exceed, he has to be bigger, higher than all of the other priests, that has to make him superior to them, because he's the high priest, there's a hierarchy. So the high priest is really represents the most spiritual, highest person in the Jewish people, who officiates, he goes into the Holy of Holies. Unbelievable. Yet, so when we look at in what way is he above everyone else, what is his qualities? Okay, we understand he has to be a very righteous person, he has to be a holy person, he has to be all these things. What else does he need to be? Amazing. He needs to be wealthy. So you'd say wealthy money, like, well, that's only something that can serve as corruption, that could be negative, and so on and so forth. Yeah, as long as the world is not rectified, yes, but in a rectified world, the world that's connected to God, physical wealth is part of the connection. It's part of the connection. It's because if the goodness of God has to materialize in matter. And that means that in a physical world, there is abundance. And if he is the holiest person, meaning the godliest of human beings, he should be the wealthiest. So he had to be wealthier than all of his brothers. Which, in other words, when the physical, material, and spiritual world are completely unified. So spiritual wealth is immediately translated into physical because you can't separate from them. The godly is just as revealed in the material as in the spiritual. The Rebbe, in a later talk, we're going to see in a couple of months from now, hopefully Mashiach will long be here, explains how, therefore, today's days it is actually a righteous pursuit, a pursuit of righteousness and holiness, to see to it be wealthy. It's no more just like, okay, if you do that, or if you're wealthy, you can do nice things with the money. No. The physical world needs to be perfect. And perfection, including, is abundance. Should be nothing lacking, even more than what. Of course, once you have the money, you do good things with the money. Okay, amazing. But now we are continuing. The last line that we learned in chapter 8 was the Rebbe says that the high priest goes into the Holy of Holies. It used to be they only went into the Holy of Holies only in Yom Kippur. But the Rebbe brought from a midrash to say that when it says that he can, that the Kohen Gadol is allowed to go in, there is a midrash that says that if the Kohen does the certain procedure of the right, the priest does the right avoda, the right services, he can go into the temple anytime. But we know halachically it's not the case. So the Rebbe interprets and he says, when Mashiach will come, maybe that will be the case. Perhaps that will be the case. But the high priest will be in a level to go, it will go into the Holy of Holies all the time. So what does that mean? That means that the high priest, if he can go there all the time, means that that's where he belongs. Behold it, that's God's room. That's where God is manifesting. And the answer is, we have unified with God to the point that our place is with God. We live in his room. We can share one room with him. And the greatest presence of God is where we belong. Not spiritually, with our physical bodies. That's the union. That's the ultimate union. However, that is only to the high priest. The high priest, who is the holiest of all of us, most refined of all of us, can be there. The rest of us, outside. We're not allowed to even go there, even on Yom Kippur. No, until we learn today's chapter number 9. What does the Rebbe add? He says this is a directive. This comes to teach for every single Jew. Now, while we are all part of the kingdom of God, refers to us at Sinai, that you will be to me, Mamlechas Kohen, it will be a kingdom of priests. So that means, what does that mean? Not just regular priests. It means that every single one of the Jewish people is really considered a high priest. Now, it has not yet revealed itself. This will be revealed by the redemption. In other words, because what is the redemption? The redemption is when the godly potential and divine truth of everything will finally be able to express itself. There will be no more constriction. So if God says to us the truth, that you are a kingdom of priests, which means and the ultimate meaning of that, as he brings some sources to that, is that we are a kingdom of high priests. That means every single person has that ability. In essence, it's just not expressed because it's hidden, because it's exile. But once we're out of exile, so then what happens? The deepest potential of every single one of us is revealed, surfaces. So everybody will be a high priest. And therefore, every single person has a relationship, not on the deepest, inner, deepest, highest moment, inner core of their soul, but their physical body, a soul in a body, has a connection to the Holy of Holies. And he quotes a Rambam, a passage of Maimonides, in the laws of the Jubilee years, Shemitah and Yovel, where the Rambam says that not only the tribe of Levi, not only the Levites, are able to be considered God's servants, but every single person whose heart has inspired him becomes holy, the Rambam says. The Rambam uses these words at 80, becomes sanctified with the holy of holiness, which means with the peak of holiness, the holiness of the highest of the inner sanctuary. Based on this, the Rebbe connects to it an amazing story. Wait, we'll get to that in a minute. And he says, based on the midrash that we said before, that the relationship of the high priest to the Holy of Holies is not only on Yom Kippur, but it's every time. And when Mashiach comes, the high priest will be able to go to the Holy of Holies all the time. But now the Rebbe wants to extend that. Not just wants to, he extends that. And he says, once we've now uncovered and found the source, that in the core essence, every single one of us is a high priest, and therefore belong in the Holy of Holies. So it's not only on the holiest day of the year, but it's every single day. Every single day at all times, after in the future, anybody can walk in. You're feeling inspired. You want to go to the Holy of Holies. Go, go, go. Nothing holding back. To to achieve the deepest oneness with Hashem in the Holy of Holies. And he, based on this, he explains an amazing story. There's a story in Kings, in Malachim, in Kings 2, Yud Aleph Aleph, chapter 11, verse number 1. Tells a story over there. I didn't look it up now. I once looked it up. I forgot the details. But it tells a story just in general. I think it was during the days, the reigns of Izebel. Izebel was a wicked queen who was killing out all the prophets and so on and so forth. She was paranoid. She wanted to be the ruler. Anyway, she killed all of the king's family. There was one survivor. It was a little boy. His name was Yoash. He was born, and it was a danger for his life. In order to protect him, his aunt, her name was Yehosheva. She was his aunt, or like they say, aunt. And she took him, and she concealed him in a place called Cheder Hamitos. She concealed him in a place called Cheder Hamitos, which means in the bedroom. Which bedroom did she hide him in? So the bedroom is alluding to the Holy of Holies. There's a lot to talk about, because ultimately that bedroom represents the Holy of Holies. It represents an intimacy with God. That's when God has intimacy with us in the bedroom. Privacy of the bedroom represents God's intimacy with the Jewish people, which only happens on Yom Kippur, when the high priest goes in. But she took him. And she hid him in the Holy of Holies, a place where no one is allowed to go yet. He was there. How long was he there? He was a little boy. He wasn't that downstairs in the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies had two floors, meaning the whole temple had two floors. There was the downstairs where everything, and then was the upstairs. There was an upper floor on the top. No one ever went there. But it was parallel, right? It had the holiness of the holiest of the Holy of Holies. So she hid him upstairs in the higher realm. No one knew they were there. He was there for 6 years. He was there with his nurse. So what did she do with this little baby? She had to take care of him, including all the needs. Feed him, nurse him, and do what? Change his diapers too. So you're talking about doing everything for this little boy. We're in the Holy of Holies. You couldn't have, and went how long? For 6 entire years he was there. And then in the end, he became the king. But what are you doing? Usually the high priest would go in there and it would be like the most concentrated moments. And here he's living there, take his nap and feeding him. And with babies, you know, you have to burp them. And you have the whole situation. Everything was done in the Holy of Holies. So you can say it's an emergency. It was a life-saving gesture. And what don't you do to save a life? Even the desecration of the Holy of Holies. There was no desecration. According to the eyes of the Rebbe, there's no desecration. Ultimately, where does our body belong? God desires the intimacy with our body. God ultimately wants to reveal himself in the physical world. The human body, the Jewish body, is the ultimate choice that God has made in which to connect to. So really, everybody has a body which potentially could live its entire life in the Holy of Holies. It's just that obviously that level of state of being is far off in the future. It has not, you know, it hasn't been yet reached. When Mashiach comes, and then as we're moving deeper into the days of Mashiach, we will reach that level. This king, he was from the family of David. He was one of the kings in the lineage of David. So he belongs to the Mashiach lineage. So he, in his life as a child, it was expressed. It reached a revelation. It was revealed in his, the fact that he lived in the Holy of Holies as a baby in that place, and not as a child. Now, the Rebbe says, why was it revealed then? Why in that particular time? Because what are we learning? We're learning all over that it's only when the manner in which we achieve such connection to God, which as we discussed yesterday is essence to essence, and Hashem's essence is revealed, is only during the time it's via the exile. God conceals himself and shrouds himself in all the concealments and all the darkness and all this in the world in general, in time and space in general, and specifically in when the world gets very, very dark and all the concealments, It's really, really him that is hiding there. And in the hiddenness is God's deeper self. The very essence of God is in the hiddenness. And only when we uncover him through the hiddenness, that's when we achieve such bonding, such a level of connection. Which means that you need the exile to be able to come to the redemption. As we learned, that the word gola make up the word geula. Exile is the four letters that are make up the five-letter word. Geula, four out of the five letters, is geula. And the fifth letter is nothing more than the godly light, the godly content of those four letters. So being that at that time there was even though it was the time when the temple stood and it was during a time of non-exile, but there was a little bit of a period of exile, the fact that you have this wicked queen killing out all the descendants of King David. Literally, they couldn't have bigger exile than that. So it was a darkness. Well, as a result of that darkness, guess what came out of this? Without that darkness, no one would have ever entertained to take a baby and with the baby's nurse and live in the Holy of Holies. But because of that darkness and because of that decree, what did it lead to a child to live in the messianic state already. That just teaches us how every darkness is an opportunity. Not to get frazzled and not to get thrown off by darkness, but to realize that every darkness that comes, God forbid, our way, we shouldn't look for darkness. But if it does, it's because God is hiding in that darkness. And there's a much deeper connection waiting. If we only stay focused and burrow through, because we have it within us to burrow through, as we're going to see in the next part of the talk, and uncover the ultimate connection to Hashem. And this idea, he says, as it applied to the king, it's not just the king, it wasn't only Yoash, this can be a example for every Jew, that one day we will be in a level that we can physically live in the Holy of Holies. In a sense, I might say, you don't have to live in the Holy of Holies because your bedroom will be the Holy of Holies. And in essence, it's ready now, but now it's not revealed yet. It will be revealed. All of the physical, all of the material will be expressive of God's very essence. So we will be in the Holy of Holies. And therefore, it doesn't make a difference. You can be in your house. You can be in the Holy of Holies because it is already spread. It has already expressed itself in the material world. This is also, the Rebbe says, connected to the second Torah portion this week, where there is the second Torah portion this week is called Kedoshim, which Kedoshim means it's a commandment to be holy. God commands us to be holy. And God says, be holy because I am holy, which is very, very telling. What do you mean? God is holy. So what does that mean? That we should be holy? And God says, no, no, no. I created you to be holy. How holy should you be? So it says, God says, be holy because I am holy. When nobody tells us to be holy, is he talking about us in heaven? No, he's talking about living life on earth, our souls in our bodies, with our bodies, and bring our bodies into holiness deeper. It's precisely because of the body that we can reach the epitome of holiness. How holy? So God says, be as ki kadosh ani, because I am. So that means, it seems like he's asking us to match up with, to synchronize with his holiness, which the sages actually say that it took the Hasidic masters to reveal that that's what the sages meant. Because there's a statement of the sages over here, the Midrash, where the Midrash says commandment, be holy because I am holy. The Midrash asks the question, so if I'm telling you to be holy like me, does that mean you can ever be as holy as God is? And the Midrash uses the term, Yachel kemoini, you think you can be as holy as God? So the verse says, I am holy, that the real holiness is reserved for me. I am really holy. You can be semi-holy, almost holy. That's how you read the Midrash as Jews have always read this Midrash on the simple interpretation, until the Hasidic teachers come along, who are able to crack open everything to its deepest essence. And they just play with the world a little. Yachol kamayni doesn't mean you would think. Usually, and whoever learns Talmud knows, when it says the word yachol, it always means you would think, and then it comes to negate that thought. Yachol means you might think. But there's another meaning to the word yachol. You can read yachol not as a question, but you can read yachol as you're able. Yachol means able. I am able to go. You need a ride to the airport. I can take you. So yachol means I'm able. So then you read God is really saying, that was the question, you would think, rather, Yachol Kamayni, you can be like me. Talmud Loimar, Kaddish Ani, God says, I am holy and I am empowering you to be as holy as me. This is this idea that one day we match up in holiness. Not so, but in the physical world. This is the wild. This is crazy. This is Geula. This is Mashiach. Now, all of this, the Rebbe now in chapter 10 connects it to something personal. To something personal. The day the Rebbe gave this talk is the 13th day of the month of Iyar. Okay, we're today on the 5th day of the month of Iyar. That year, things were a little different, set the calendar. The 13th day of the month of the year. Now, the 13th month of the year happens to be a day very personal to the Rebbe. The Rebbe's brother, younger brother, had passed away many years earlier, and this was his yahrzeit on that day. His brother's name was Yisrael Aryeh Leib. So the Rebbe goes into a whole explanation of the name of his brother also conveys these very ideas that we're talking about now on the deepest level. Now, first of all, the Rebbe is teaching us something over here. The Rebbe is teaching us how to live our lives, that anything that happens in our life or everything that's in our mind, everything that's catching our attention, we need to live it in Mashiach's reality. We have to live it from the ultimate truth. We're able to. So we have to look for the Mashiach component, because Mashiach isn't everything, and we have to unlock it and reveal it. How is the Rebbe showing it to us? He's showing it to us because on that Shabbos, part of the Rebbe's headspace, we can imagine, is his brother. It's his brother's yahrzeit. So the Rebbe is deeply attached to his brother, and this is his brother's yahrzeit. So he's thinking about his brother. But being that the Rebbe is living in Mashiach consciousness, so therefore what is he doing? He's thinking of his brother within the context of Mashiach. He's uncovering the Mashiach element in his brother's name. And the Rebbe says, even though, and the Rebbe goes and makes a little introduction. He says, even though this is a private issue, it regards to a private person. His brother was not a Rebbe. The Rebbe is the Rebbe, but his brother was not a Ish Tziburi, a public figure, actually a very private person. But the Rebbe says, all Jews are connected. So if it's a name of one Jew, it's really related to all Jews because we're really one soul. Deeper, the Rebbe says, his first name is Yisrael, which Yisrael is the name, which is literally the name of Israel, where even if we, you know, one person is Yankel and the other one is Chaim and the other one is whatever the names, everybody has a different name, but we all share one name, we're all called Israel. So seeing that his private name was Israel, so we definitely can use his name as a lesson on everything we're talking about right now. So the Rebbe takes a look at the name Israel and he says, wow, what an amazing lesson. Again, it's all kind of same theme, just bringing it out from different angles. We know that the name Yisrael, which is the name that was given to our great-grandfather, third of the patriarchs, Yaakov, the Rebbe says has within it two opposite paradoxical ideas, seemingly paradoxical ideas. On the one hand, we know that the name Yisrael stands for, it's an acronym, Yesh Shishim Riboy Oisis LaTorah. In other words, if we take every letter of the name and we use it as a head letter for a whole word, so the Yud stands for the word Yesh, the Shin stands for the word Shishim, and the Resh, Riboy, and the Aleph for Osios, and the Lamed for LaTorah, which means 600,000 letters of the Torah. I mean, in the Torah scroll, there's 600,000 letters. The commentators explain how that works out, because really you'll find only 300,000 letters around, a little over 300. So there's an explanation how this works, that it's 600,000 letters of the Torah. 600,000 letters of the Torah relate to the 600,000 souls. The number of souls that exist are 600,000, even though we've had millions and millions. Right now we have like 50 million Jews here, so it's more than 600,000. But these are 600,000 root souls. And each one of these souls, as it explains in Kabbalah and in Tanya, has 600,000 sparks. 600,000 times 600,000. But in any case, 600,000 root souls. That means that every single one of us, every single soul, is rooted in the letter of the Torah. That's one meaning to the name Yisrael. There's another meaning to the name of Yisrael. And that was the simple meaning given in the Bible, given in the scripture, given in the Torah. What does it say? And after Yaakov was wrestling with the angel, he met an angel and he's wrestling with him all night. And after he completes that and he defeat and he's victorious over him, he forces the angel to bless him. And the angel says to him, "What is your name?" And Yaakov says, "Yaakov." And he says, "Your name is no more from now on going to be Yaakov. Your name is going to be Israel, Yisrael." And he explains why. Because you have wrestled and you have ministered over angelic beings, im Elokim, with divine beings, manoshim, and with people, vatuchal, and you won. You were victorious. That's the reason for the name Yisrael. So the word is from the word saris, means you've ministered. From the word sar, kale means overpowers, powerful forces. You fought against angelic forces. You also fought against super humans, really powerful humans, because Yaakov had Esav, who was a formidable foe, his brother, and Lavan. He was the biggest, most dangerous force of evil. As we referred to him in the Haggadah on Pesach, we said that he wanted to uproot the Jewish people more than anybody else. He was a force of darkness. He was a magician. He was a sorcerer. He was a con artist. He was as dangerous as could be. And Yaakov was able to subdue him and win over him. So that's why we're called Israel. So the Rebbe says, I don't get it. How can the name Israel have these two connotations, which are total opposite? Connotation of the 600,000 letters of the Torah give us some impression that the Jewish people are rooted high, high, high. The Torah is the divine wisdom, it's the divine will, it's the highest, deepest pleasure in God. And we're rooted, that means we're part of something that is infinitely higher than the world. We're plugged into the deepest aspects of the infinity of Hashem. And then the other name is strong. We're wrestling with the world, wrestling with darkness. Winning over darkness, but wrestling with darkness. So how does it work? Both of these. Which one is it? One is a name that gives a sense of deep tranquility and peacefulness. The other one is a name of a warrior. So which one? What's going on over here? The Rebbe says both are true. And it works together. That's the uniqueness of being a Jew. In essence, the Jew needs to know one thing. First, the first underlying concept that every single one of us has to know, that we are rooted in the Torah. It's not just that we can study Torah, we can learn Torah, we were given Torah, our souls are plugged into the Torah, into the divine wisdom. And therefore, an interesting teaching, the Rebbe says, every single movement in our life, everything we do, has to be synchronized and fit and has to match with the Torah. Can't be a little bit off. Anything that is a kind of, if you're doing something in your life that is not, that doesn't match, it's like, doesn't correspond with the Torah, then it causes a disconnect. No good. And make sure to synchronize everything in our lives is to like kind of flow with the Torah. That's why we have to seek guidance of the Torah in every aspect, all aspects of life, because that's our soul source, to be in the frequency. I'm using a new microphone now. We're inaugurating it in this class. Actually, my daughter's class was the inaugural class that I used it, but I'm playing with it a little bit. It has two parts to it. This is one part over here. This is the transmitter. And on top of the phone that I'm using is the receiver. And the two of them have to kind of catch a certain, they have to be on the same wavelength, because this should transmit to that. It needs to be on the same frequency. So they have to communicate between each other and pair up. What you call pairing, the pair up. So if a Jew down here is rooted, his soul is rooted in the Torah, we have to always make sure we're in the same frequency of the Torah, that we pair up. So if we do things down here that are not matching our source, no good. There's a disconnect. And it can't bring blessings. So all blessings, or everything in our lives has to be matched up, synchronized with the Torah. That's on the one hand. But the other thing, a person could say, okay, so then all I need is Torah, study Torah all day, and wisdom of God, channel, study, and learn, and I'm okay. No, no, no. Remember the rule. What's God's desire? Look at three things. Don't ignore the world. There's a big world out there that needs the illumination. It needs to be refined. And the ultimate peering up, the ultimate peering yourself with the Torah and with God is going to require bringing the world into it as well. And therefore, you can't be content in your own life satisfied that you're in a holy place, a good place, studying Torah and committed to God, engaging in spiritual activities, even doing mitzvahs, but in a way that you're removed from the world, doesn't work that way. Got to go out and deal with the world, like Yaakov, who went out into the world. And you got it. And when you go out into the world, doesn't mean just finding those parts of the world where there's no resistance. Look for the place, and you're going to find what we call it, the low-hanging fruit, the people that are most easy to inspire and to reach them. And those are the people you'll hang out with, but you're scared or you don't feel comfortable in engaging and confronting that which is a little bit more raug, that which is a little bit more antithetical to Torah and holiness, because you feel no, I don't want to go there, I don't want to deal with it, it's dark, it's hostile, it's bad, it's negative, it's evil, it's corrupt, it's a big dark world out there. No, we are called Yisrael. Our name Israel is to show us that what, that we're meant to be an influence on the world and even on the forces of satanic forces. We're meant to confront it. Like Yaakov is wrestling with the angel of God, even the very dark stuff. We can fight them and we can penetrate it. And we'll see soon how. It's amazing. We can confront it and we're meant to influence it. Esav's people, even the angelic, what does the Rebbe say means angelic forces? It means nature. Elohim is also, the forces of nature are all based on spiritual angelic forces. And they create nature. Sometimes we feel that nature, the natural, the life, nature doesn't allow, me to live exactly according to God. Nature is obscuring. I mean, you have to, accept the world for what it is. It doesn't work that way. No. You have a power to penetrate into nature, turn nature around, make nature be beyond nature. That's what it is. Nature itself can, infuse nature with miracles, lift nature up. By recognizing that we're connected and we can reveal God within nature, and as a result of that, lift nature up, and also that's nature itself, and then there is humanity, Anoshim, people, the 8 billion people that are in the world, which sometimes we feel like we want to write them off. So many people as corrupt and bad, and these people have these philosophies, and these have these philosophies, and these have these ideologies, and this and this, and therefore. This is all outside of God's plan. They're not going to greet Mashiach. They're not part of it. That's not it. And is to go out and vatuchal, and to be and vatuchal means to reign over it. But how? What does it mean? So the Rebbe points out the word, such an important word, vatuchal. Not to come out with a blazing gun and blast it all and eliminate all the bad guys. Every ideology or every thought process or every movement or everything that looks like it's not consistent with Torah, so you're going to come out, we're going to fight it with like, destroy the people that are standing for it. And, right? That might be the way to go. Or even maybe not kill it or destroy it, but at least overpower it till it surrenders. The Rebbe says no. The word vatuchal means the word inclusiveness. Look, from the word kol, inclusiveness, including it, which means the way you deal with a hostile, with a force that is opposing you, a force they cook in the world. We have so many things that seem to be in opposition to holiness. So instead, let's look, look at sometimes we look at certain movements that there are, which don't necessarily seem to match up with Torah values, total opposite values, which are not consistent with Torah. And the way to fix it is not to destroy it, but to dig deeper and find out what are these, what is the fire burning behind this movement? What is it looking for? And when you can uncover and reveal its pure essence, its godly dimension, you can show it that what it really wants is Mashiach. What we really spoke about, like last week, we spoke about the gender, the woke movement to equalize men and women and to be able to remove the bit. And we discussed last week, it's a messianic drive. It's just misinterpreted. So what we really need to do is just to set it straight, not to destroy it, but just to to communicate, to teach, to educate, and to uncover and to reveal how it too wants Mashiach. And it too is looking for this harmonious, godly existence. Because people have preconceived notions about what God is. The God that they're fighting is not God. It's their closed-minded, immature, constricted vision that was given to them by some whatever, which has created such a negative element of God. But when we appreciate that, we understand that God is the is of everything. He is the is of you and the is, and he is the reality of all of existence. And he wants you to open up to allow that infinite truth and that infinite reality to flow in it and through it. And he wants to be you, through you, with you, and with you and your talents and your abilities. And he recognizes all that passion and all that fire and all that energy that you have, and that's precisely what he wants to through you and with you. So the very, very person who's fighting for darkness is suddenly going to be fighting for goodness. Because he or she realizes that this is truth, this is the MS, this is the truth. And he can recognize that the drives that has been driving him and her and their madness is actually this new light of Mashiach that's causing this fire in their soul. It's just misaligned. It's our responsibility. And when we teach, and when we get out there, and when we inspire, and when we share. So we're not ripping anybody's heads off. We're not fighting. Just uncovered. We're uncovered. We're teaching, we're uncovering, we're inspiring. We're opening up people to a higher consciousness and a higher awareness. And with that, we can reach everybody, every single person. So much so that the aspects of the world, who are the ones who said, who gave Yaakov the new name, Israel, that you are reigning superior over us? It was Esau's angel himself. It was the enemy himself who comes in and concedes. In our case, it's the world itself that was a constriction and a hiding and an obstacle is now saying, I admit to your truth. And it's not just your truth, it's my truth. And this is really what I've always wanted. Now you're talking. Now you're speaking to me. What does that lead to? The Rebbe says the word Vatuchal, which again, this is all a description on the name Yisrael. Sarisa Malukim. Again, it's not enough that you're 600,000 letters of the Torah, which means we're plugged into truth. And therefore, we have nothing to worry because we're plugged into the most powerful, into what is. The point over here is our job that God is, in, that is God is counting on us, that we're going to do, is to uplift and reveal this in all of creation and in all of the world. And when we do that, the next meaning of the word Vatuchal is from the word Kol, which means we include everything in ourselves, and therefore we have everything. There's nothing lacking. There's nothing lacking in any single one of us. We have all the good of the world, everything in the world, because all the world is, all the good of the world has now been included into our experience. And there's the words of the Rebbe, as the Yid is a koidel kol inyana yana, that the Jew includes all the matters of the world. And that hates Zay Oif and lifts them up. This is Vet Oif Ketanah to the point where we accomplish the idea of the Geula through revealing the Aleph in Geula. And we come now to the last point of the word Vatuchal. Vatuchal also means, as we said earlier, remember when we spoke about the meaning of the word Yachol, that Vatuchal means from the word capable. What does that mean? When we bring the world into, when we get the world involved as well, when we transform the darkness of the world to light, when we reveal the godly Aleph in all elements of opposite, which was till now opposition, then not only don't we have any more any oppositions, but they themselves bring forth new potential and new capabilities into the realms of holiness. The unholy ultimately ends up becoming a incredible contributing factor to holiness. The unholiness transformed and invigorates holiness with an invigoration and with a potency and with a power that is far greater than the energy of holiness on its own. And that's the inclusion. Like, we know that when we are able to get our body and our animalistic self involved in holiness, it strengthens our soul. Not only don't we have any more obstacle, any opposition, but we actually, the unholy fuels the holy with power. It ravs up the, it gives it an engine that the holiness never had. As it's discussed in many places, how the sources of darkness is much higher than the sources of light. And when we convert darkness to light, then we bring in that as a fuel. So this is the explanation. So literally, the concept of his brother's name Yisroel, the Rebbe is showing us, is everything we've been learning earlier. What is that? That we need to find, include the world in our ultimate, that we find redemption and we get to the ultimate state, not through negating the world, but uplifting the world, not fighting and destroying the world, but uncovering its true nature, bringing the Aleph into the darkness, bringing Esav on board, bringing love on board, and in our case, bringing 8 billion people on board. That's where it's at. So anybody that tells you, when you listen to people talking about Mashiach, people, there's going to be destruction, there's going to be fire and hellish fire and nuclear destruction, and there's going to be just a few survivors, and there's going to be... That's all immature understanding. Our job regarding all these teachers that are teaching such teachings is to uncover within them as well a deeper, help them recognize a deeper truth, a higher truth. The Mashiach, the Lubavitcher Rebbe is bringing to the world. It's a different Mashiach. It's a whole different way of seeing things. Why? How does he know this? Because only the one that's meant to do the job is the one who knows, who has that information. Those who are not meant to do the job don't have the insight. Now the Rebbe says his brother's name is Yisroel Aryeh Leib. It's not only Yisroel, it's also Aryeh Leib. Just 1 second here, see what our timing is. Aryeh Leib means a lion. And Aryeh is the word lion in Hebrew, and Leib is the word lion in Yiddish. So the Rebbe says, in my brother's name, Yisroel, you have this concept, but not only do you have the idea, you also have the practical instructions of how to implement. How do we implement this? How is it that we're able to transform everything to light, all darkness, everything? We're able to go out there and completely uplift everything. The answer is, what do we need to do? The first thing is we need to evoke our inside strength. You have to be a lion. Now, based on what the Mishnah says in Tractate Masechta and Ethics of the Fathers, it says Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema says we should incorporate in ourselves traits of various different animals. One of them is the trait of a lion. Be gibor, incorporate the strength of a lion. And the reason is because we have the lion strength in our soul. If your soul is a piece of God, then you have that strength of a lion. But it means that we have to recognize that we're strong. If we think we're weak and we're little peepsqueaks, we're not doing anything. We have to recognize that we're strong. Every single one of us has the ability to transform the entire world. That's our, obviously, especially of all of us together. The more we can get involved, we have the ability to do this. We should never cave in and surrender and fall into despair and think, we're breaking through. We are breaking through. We're breaking through amazingly. There's so much more Mashiach consciousness and Mashiach talk in the world. There's so much more thirst. There's such an awakening really taking place, although you won't necessarily see it on the news media. And all of that is because of all this Mashiach talk that we're talking and we're inspired. It's affecting, it's having huge ripple effects on the world. Amazing. Especially since the whole thing is organic. It comes from the inside out. So people change in a very deep way, fundamental way. Well, we have to be strong. That's the idea of Aryeh, be a lion. And the lion, the Rebbe says, is both a Hebrew lion and a Yiddish lion. What does that mean, a Hebrew and Yiddish lion? a line in two languages means. In matters of holiness and matters of doing a mitzvah, we have to be strong. Don't budge one. Don't let anything ever budge you from doing a mitzvah. But it's not only in the matters of holiness, the matters of the mundane aspects of life, just outside of Hebrew, outside of the world of holiness. When we're regularly doing everyday things, we should still be a lion. A lion that everything that we do has to be with the strength of a lion, with confidence, a godly confidence. Now, obviously, when we're doing it with the fact that we're connecting to the divine, to the Mashiach component, to the God particle that's within, which is its really essence, but with a strength. The word lebi says has another meaning as well. In addition to it being translating the lion's strength into not just the realm of holiness, but in all aspects of life. But the word lebi says also has also another indication, is that it's giving you the idea of how actually is this work done. So the word leib is lamid beis, which spell the word leiv, which means heart, and inside of it being a yud. Yud is a letter which the numeric value is 10, represents we activate the 10 powers of our soul. In other words, we study Torah, we evoke our emotions, we are fully activating our powers of our soul, and through that we engage the world. And where is it being expressed? In our lave, in our heart. And we know that even, the Rebbe says it, even when a person's existence is not perfect yet, but the heart is always in a good place. As the sages say, the heart of the Jew is always in a healthy place. So the yud is the 10 powers of the soul, circled by the lamed beis of the heart. Or another interpretation he gives, that the lamed beis represent, that is surrounding the yud, represent the three garments of thought, speech, and action. So when a person funnels and takes, uses the inner strength of the Arya, of the lion, and based on that activates their 10 powers and the three garments, the thought, speech, and action, to deliver and to live from this godly, from this, with this Yisrael consciousness that's on the one hand plugged into Torah, but on the other hand turned outward and recognizing the need to engage the world and elevate the world. Through this, we accomplish this monumental task of ultimate transformation of all of existence, inclusion of all of existence, and uplifting of all of the world into the ultimate light of Mashiach. Now we start chapter 11. Based on this, he says, how he summarizes. And he says, he's going to give the practical teaching of what this comes to teach us. Based on all of this, we have many types of various different lessons that we learn out regarding of our service of what we need to do in order to bring Mashiach. And how we, two things, what we need to do to bring Mashiach, and how we need to prepare ourselves for the mindset of Geula, for the mindset of Mashiach. As we stand now at the very, very last moments of exile, of Geula, our work needs to be, and we want to turn it into Geula, we need to discover the Aleph. The first thing we need to know, we have an answer. Some people are scared of Mashiach. Whereas when we talk about Mashiach, the Rebbe says there are people that are worried, that are scared, and they're getting nervous of the fact that we're causing such a storm. In other words, we're making such a commotion. The Rebbe is talking about in 1991 when the Rebbe went out gung ho with this excitement to bring Mashiach. It ruffled some feathers outside of Chabad, but even in Chabad, there were certain people who were kind of running the institutions that were getting nervous because they talk Mashiach. Some people start saying it's cultish, it's messianic, it's a cult, it's a this, it's a that, and it's not so good for business. In other words, it's not so good for, you know, we have people that like Chabad already, we've already made certain acquaintances, we've already built up. And now when we start talking about Mashiach and all this tense, so many people wrote into the Rebbe with their concerns. So the Rebbe is addressing over here these concerns. He says, I understand. He says, there are many people that it's amazing. He says these words. He says, since these people are open people, so they're not going to keep it in their heart. In other words, they're chassidim of the Rebbe, but they're going to sit quietly and keep it in their heart. They're actually, because they're very honest people, they don't want to keep something in their heart and pretend on the outside. If they have something that they don't understand, they're going to convey it. So they bring their wonder to me, and they're saying, what's going to be? it seems like we're gonna undo all that. We start with all this Mashiach stuff. We're gonna like lose a lot that we've built already. So the Rebbe says, because that's not understanding. Mashiach is not letting you lose anything. Mashiach is here to take everything that you have and lift it up and bring it to so much higher. So if you have institutions and you're doing a lot of good and you made certain acquaintances and you made good and you built certain businesses, whether it's in the business world, whether it's in the world of activism and holiness, whatever it is that you've accomplished and you've done, no one is destroying your shul. When Mashiach comes, we're going to take your shul with it to the temple. No one is destroying your community. You're going to continue being an influence in your community, but in a much more powerful way. Everything you have is just going to be invigorated and elevated and intensified a millionfold. So don't worry. Nothing is being taken away. Anything good that you want to have is just going to increase. Your bank account that you have, no one is shutting it down. It's just going to be a lot more money in that account. Everything that you have. So imagine if someone is given the opportunity, like the person who's eyesight, they can see, but they can only see black and white. And someone comes to them and says, listen here, we have now a certain thing. We do a certain procedure, a laser procedure in your eyes. It's not going to hurt nothing. And it's just, so now you're going to get full-fledged eyes. You can be able to see in color. Person says, no, I'm worried. You're going to take away. I'm not taking anything. What you can see, you're going to be able to have enhanced vision. Whatever you're seeing is just a limited experience of seeing. Now you'll be able to see color, which is an enhancement of Mashiach is not taking anything from our world. It's just going to enhance a millionfold everything that's there. That's why this, when Mashiach comes, food will taste better, literally, because everything will be kicking in the highest. The fruits, the taste of food will be uncomparably better. And the same will be our vision when we see things. The beauty of the world will be just so much more beautiful. The same world, but it's true colors and it's true light and it's true depth and it's true meaning. And when we look at people, that's the main thing. We will see them for who they really are, with the infinite potential that they have. Everything suddenly will shine with a divine brightness. How incredible. Daylight will be so much brighter. Everything will be so much, and our eyes will have the capacity to be able to take that brightness. And the world will become so much. So everything you have, the Rebbe says, nothing is running away. Nothing is being destroyed. Everything is being uplifted. And what that does to us, he says, in terms of our excitement in preparing ourselves. So what does it say to business people who might get scared of Mashiach? I'm not going to have my business anymore. I'm not going to have. There's, no. Since you know that when Mashiach comes, your business is coming along with you. And you're, if you want it. And if it's not a headache, but if it's a good thing and you want it, it's going to come along, and it's only going to be more successful. So therefore, now that you're preparing, make sure now to do your work to prepare for Mashiach, and make sure to do it in your business and within your business, which means the people that you interact with in your business life, since that too is part of redemption, so include them in this experience. Bring them into this experience, which means uncover in them their godly connection. But don't just do business with them. Speak to them about keeps of doing a mitzvah. Get them to give charity. Get them to learn a word of Torah. Say, listen, we're having a business meeting. We're going to open every business meeting with a Torah thought. How long? 45 seconds, a minute. Imagine if you do that in every business meeting, because you want to illuminate it with God. Or at the end of every business meeting, you say to everybody, let's take a moment and give charity. Not a lot. Everybody should give, because we're seeing actually how this is influencing the world. Because you see, many businesses today do charity. It's part of the business. And they advertise charity. They have their causes. They stand. They give charity. Not necessarily every cause is something that we might agree with. But still, the idea that we're here not just to make money for our selfish interests, but to do something higher than ourselves, which is a mitzvah, is something that is part of the world already today. So the more we can increase that. So that's the lesson that Rebbe says for business people. People that are worldly people, don't be afraid you're losing the world. Don't think you're going to enter into some extremely hyper-religious world where all your life that you've known before is not going to exist. That's not true. Everything you have is going to be there, but so much better. On the other hand, the Rebbe turns to the extreme religious people who are thinking about Mashiach and they're gung-ho about Mashiach and they're trying to race towards the redemption, do everything they can for the redemption, and think that that is through abandoning the world and living very, very holy lives, withdrawn from society, closing themselves up into some, you know, ashram, into some closed-off place to seek spirituality. The Rebbe says, you're making a huge mistake. That's not where you're finding redemption. You're finding redemption. Take a walk around your block. Look at the people around. Look at the homes. Look at the people living there. Look at your neighbors. They might not be Jewish. They might not be, they might be of this race or of this color or of this gender or of this affiliation. Yes, that's where Mashiach is at. Try to connect to them. Find out how you can introduce some godly consciousness into their lives. Not in a way of preaching, in a way of conversation, of inspiration. That's where you find Mashiach. You fix the world around you. You take the people with you. You take everything you see. It's all part of God's creation. It's all, this is where God wants. It's not through, and it's not through shouting your truths until the people, till you deafen everybody, or you shove your truths into people's eyes. That's not what it is. Gentle, talk, inspire, teach, lift up. And in that lifting up, you lift up humanity, and that's how you find Hashem. And through this, we uncover the Aleph. And he says, regarding Gentiles, regarding Jews, he says, of course, you spread Torah and mitzvahs amongst those that are not affiliated. You get people to do more mitzvahs. You teach them higher teachings of Torah. You teach chassidus like we do over here. And according to that, you turn to the Gentiles and start helping Gentiles keeping their mitzvahs. And then the Rebbe concludes, we're at the conclusion of it all. One second, let me see the time. Keep this as an hour. Oh, another 3 minutes. We'll do it quickly. Rebbe concludes. For this reason, that Mashiach is one of inclusion and elevation of the world. In chapter 12, the Rebbe says, for that reason, we'll see an interesting thing. That even before the redemption happens, the way the redemption will go down, the way it will unfold, will not be God versus the world. Will not be some kind of like happened in Egypt, that God was fighting against the darkness and he pummeled them and he destroyed them, but rather it will be that the forces of darkness themselves, that which was once unholy, will slowly give away to holiness, and they themselves will work on assisting holiness. They themselves will become ally of holiness. First of all, regarding the Jewish people, he says that we've seen throughout all the generations till now that there were so many obstacles for Jews of various different places to keep their Torah and doing study Torah and do mitzvahs, because there was always, the nations around were very hostile to the Jewish people. The Rebbe says, in today's days, we find a major change, that we're living in countries of freedom, where no one is bothering. You can learn, you can daven, you can do your mitzvahs. And not only that, there is government assistance. Think about that. Poor families, people that are not, get government assistance. And therefore, they're able to help. They're able to, you know, to live their lives in a more, people that are wealthy and contribute, obviously, to the governments and to taxes and so on and so forth. And there are people who get government assistance. So the governments ourselves are doing charity and assisting the Jewish people in doing mitzvahs. Sometimes we get government funding for various different things, helping. So the governments themselves, which were once part of the exile, the governments are part of, unlike the way it was throughout most of our history, where we experienced intense opposition. And he says it used to be, and then the Rebbe was talking 1990, so he says, we've seen that in the United States it was that way. It's a nation of kindness, and it was always nice at least, and assistant to the Jewish people in our mitzvahs. But he says it's spreading to other countries and even to the most hostile countries. The Soviet Union at that time collapsed, and Russia as well started becoming more cooperative and assisting the Jewish people to leave Russia, opened up the Iron Curtain and assisting people going out of going up to the land of going up to Israel and help the organizations spreading Judaism and starting in what was once the previous USSR. So this is all an amazing change. Okay, we do have a question, what's going on in the last couple of years with Russia being aggressive? It's a good question. Not necessarily I have the answer, but the general notion, the Rebbe says, you're seeing a world changing. And in addition to that, he says, not just regarding the Jews, but Gentiles among Gentiles are beginning to act in a way that is far more in accordance to God's desire to a godly world. For instance, the Rebbe pointed to the United States of America using its military to help during the civil war, and I think it was in Rwanda, in which they had a major military operation, the United States, which dropping human aid, food packages, and using the military to distribute food. And after that, it was done many, many times in various different situations after earthquakes. Today, it's a normal thing. Countries send huge amount of help for other countries, and they use military help. So the Rebbe says, take a look at this. Throughout all the ages, militaries were used, and guns and fire was all used just in the negative. And now it's being used to help humanity. And he says, take a look at the kindness of the people of this country. He's talking about the United States. Take a look at the amazing kindness. Talking about people that are in Africa. It's not your relatives, people who are you have no relationship with physically. You never met these people. But when you hear that there are people suffering of starvation, you hear there are children that are hungry, especially little children, it evokes deep compassion, which is a divine trait, and they send over their tax monies, send over an enormous amount of assistance. He says, that is Mashiach. That is redemption. That is the world changing, the world becoming elevated, becoming more godlike. The Rebbe is also teaching us how to look. But sometimes we only focus on the dark stuff. Think about trends that are becoming so much more compassionate and caring and helping and so on and so forth. Which all this is the indication that Mashiach is already influencing the world. Because the nature of redemption is not an overpowering of the world, but rather and a new world, but rather the very world we have uncovering its true identity and being uplifted. So the transitioning into redemption is also coming from the world and within the world, not through some external power forcing the world into submission, but through an internal transformation that's taking place. And that really sets the tone in our own minds how we're supposed to approach redemption. Always thinking that way. Everything negative, we have to tinker with it, open it up from the inside out, and uncover the godliness, and then there's no more darkness forever and ever. And then he speaks quickly about that the United States has also dedicated itself to education. And they talk about the president, I think it was President Bush, the first Bush, who at that time announced himself that he wants to be known as the education president. And I said, these are all the values, are godly values. This is the way it should be. And the final outcome of all of this is that our avoda has to be by uncovering the aleph, and therefore, the last generation of exile becomes the first generation of redemption. It's not two separate realities. It's the exile redemption. That's why the Rebbe always referred to our generation, the last generation of exile, and the first generation of gods. And therefore, he says that every single person needs to add in their actions. And these particular things, first of all, learning more Torah regarding Mashiach, Binyan HaGeulah. And the more we study this, the more we open up the world to this reality. And then we need to take a lesson from Pesach Sheni. I'm just concluding quickly that if Chas V'Shalom something was lost, we should recognize there's nothing lost. And even when we lost something, we can always make it up. And even things that we think are lost completely in exile, that they disappeared, we lost them, we can retrieve them, including, the Rebbe says in the end, it seems like the end of the exile, the Kates HaGeulah got lost, disappeared. It was elevated to a very high place. In our case, we have Mashiach Tzidkenu himself in a state where he's kind of lost, but we don't find him, we don't see him. So the point over here is that we're able to find all these lost things on top of the lesson of Pesach Sheni, and we can connect with Matzasi David Avdi in the Mizmor of Peites and Tehillim. So it's very interesting. I do want to finish with a very powerful footnote. Footnote number 126. The Rebbe in this, like at the very end of the talk, is referring to finding something that was lost, and which means finding Mashiach. And he brings a verse of chapter 89 in Psalms at Tehillim, where it says, Matsasi David Abdi, I found David my servant. In other words, it seems like David Mashiach was lost, and now we found him. Now, at that time, when the Rebbe was giving this talk, the Rebbe just turned 89. So when the Rebbe was 88, the custom is to say that the Rebbe himself was saying chapter 89 the whole year. When the Rebbe became 89, which was just 1 month before this talk was given, the Rebbe started saying, and all the Hasidim along with him, chapter 90. So the Rebbe says, all of this that God finds Mashiach and he reveals him, where is it revealed? It's revealed in chapter 90. In the Mizmor Rav Tzadik, which talks about V'inoyam Hashem Elokeinu, let the pleasantness of God be upon us. In other words, everything is revealed. So in 126, he makes a very astounding note. Remember, the Rebbe wrote these footnotes himself. He says, it is, to notice that there are five double letters in the Torah which indicate redemption. All the letters that are double in the Torah. Chaf as a double letter, Mem as a letter, Nun, Pei, and Tzadik. Sages say that each one of them, wherever there's a double letter, it means redemption. It's the key to redemption. So the redemption from Egypt was with the letter Pei. And that's why it came about through the words Pakot Pakadati. I remembered you. Our redemption is through the letter Tzadik, which means Tzemach Tzamachti. A plant I will make sprout forth, which starts with a tzaddik. Okay, and there, and Mashiach, therefore, so, and he brings from the Midrash says tzaddik, the letter tzaddik, that's the time when God is going to redeem, through the tzaddik, Hashem is going to redeem the Jewish people, and say to them, tzemach tzemachti, I have made that plant grow. Like it says in the verse, ish tzemach shemoy mitachtov yitzmach ubana seichel Hashem. Name of Mashiach, his name is tzemach, and he will grow forth, he will sprout forth from below, and he will blow, and he will build the chamber of God. So the Rebbe makes an interesting note, and he says like this. He's clearly relating it to the fact that he, by the Rebbe, we're saying chapter 90. And he says, just like the redemption of Egypt was through the letter Pei, which Pei is the equivalent to the number 80. And it's interesting to note, the Rebbe says this is the point of the note. It's interesting to note that Moshe, the Redeemer, was 80 years old. So too, regarding the future redemption, which is through the letter Tzaddik, that the Redeemer should be then 90 years old. So a clear notification where the Rebbe is kind of throwing in a sizzle of connecting Geula and the Redeemer to himself. While we know that his name, Menachem Mendel, is corresponding to the world Tzemach Tzedek, Tzemach Sprout. So it's really interesting, because, and the Rebbe then was referring to himself in the year which he was. This is the idea. It fits, the whole idea of Tzemach fits the whole discussion of it. Pakot Pakadati of Egypt, God is remembering you from the outside. So it's a redemption kind of from the outside. Tzemach Tzemach means it's growing, it's organic, it grows from within. And we merit already. See the full redemption, a redemption that comes organically from within. We experience complete redemption, and we experience it now. Bezras Hashem, we continue with these fascinating classes next week. Hopefully, let it be already in the third temple.